If green is your favourite colour or your way of living, then Grounded is the place for you. From big environmental solutions to your own backyard, wherever in the universe you may be, join me, Melanie Walker, on a journey to a cleaner, greener life. Grounded, your window on the environment. And welcome to yet another wonderful episode of All Things Green and Gorgeous, and we're not talking about Kermit the Frog, about stuff for the garden and the environment. And to tell us more about what he's been doing, it's been a while since I've actually caught up with Gavin Herron, who's one of the people we've worked with a lot over the years when it comes to television and radio. But the first time we've had you in for a podcast, I can't believe it. Gavin, yeah. How are you?
No, I'm fantastic, and it's really great to be at this wonderful facility. Yeah,
no.
It's like kudos.
It's a completely different way of looking at things these days, isn't it?
Yeah, great.
Okay, so where did you come from? I'm not talking about where, you know, which country you were born in, but where did you get into the green industry from? Because we weren't always in the green industry, were you?
No, historically, I actually worked in advertising. I was pretty senior executive in advertising. I worked in London, Hong Kong, Shanghai. Came back to Johannesburg. Worked at was the MD at Huntley Scarris. And then I just really got tired of working in advertising. And my wife had this idea of food waste composting, so I thought, persuaded her at gunpoint, I think she sometimes says, to if I could join her in a venture. Mm. And that was 10 years ago. So we were just over a 10-year-old business, which is pretty amazing. We never thought I'd be sitting in the same business for 10 years, and my wife and I are still married, which is also pretty surprising.
She hasn't put you out to compost yet.
No, not quite yet. I think she's been often tempted, and very seriously tempted. But, you know, one works with one's partner and one finds the right balance, I think, between being life partners as well as business partners. It's not easy, but you can succeed.
You just have to give it a bit of time, like good compost.
Yeah, so, exactly.
But I mean, I first came, you came onto my radar with Bokashi.
Correct.
Okay, so where did the whole idea of Bokashi come from?
So Bokashi is not a new technology. It's been around for a pretty long time. You know, it originated in Japan. But I suppose in South Africa, when we started the business, it was very, very, very new. Mm. And it really came from Karen, who had this, she was very interested in gardening, and she started with a worm farm. Mm. And quickly, as most worm farmers do, discovered that you can't compost a lot of the organic waste or food waste coming out of your kitchens. For example, cooked food, citrus, onions, meat, proteins, dairy. And so while we were doing the right thing, there was still a lot of stuff that was still going into the dustbin and going to landfill and all that. So she started doing some research and discovered the idea of Bokashi. And there was a company in Stellenbosch, which has subsequently gone into liquidation a few years ago, that actually was manufacturing Bokashi in South Africa in Stellenbosch. So we started retailing or buying a 25 kg bag from them. And then we went to 50 kgs, then we went to 100, and 10 years later, we're probably doing quite a few tons of Bokashi, which we now manufacture ourselves. So it all started with this, we wanted to do 100% of food waste, not just the stuff that worms could do. And the great thing about Bokashi is once food waste has been, let's call it Bokashi'd, which is actually a fermentation process, then the contents of that bin or the Bokashi bin can actually still be fed to composting worms, including stuff you wouldn't normally do. It's a fantastic process because it's non-smelly. Fermentation is pretty easy. The whole idea of sending zero organic waste to landfill is what we really try and do. And because we all know that landfills are not the best things, they're a necessary evil, but we need to also not send organic waste where it attracts flies, rats, pollutes water sources, all that type of stuff. Mm. So we just try to do our bit through that business. And we really then expanded to from households to commercial to building our own composting machines. So we're very proud that we're actually a South African business that develops everything in South Africa, including the microbes we use in our Bokashi.
Well, this is what I was going to ask you. What is Bokashi actually, for those people who don't know what it is?
So traditionally, Bokashi is a carrier, and it would be something like usually in the what people know it in South Africa as wheat bran, which has been inoculated with something called EM, or effective microorganisms, which is a consortia of beneficial microorganisms or bacteria, mainly lactic acid bacteria, which we know is in yogurts and all that type of stuff. And it's good for our stomachs and good for our health and all that. So that's what Bokashi generally is, and it comes in a brand form and you throw it over your food waste. We took a different track. We thought we didn't want to import EM because it's an imported product, comes from Japan or America or Europe. We didn't want to use wheat bran because we think that wheat bran is something that should be fed to animals or people or whatever it is. We also had issues with supply, seasonal supply coming out from Mozambique. I don't know why it comes from Mozambique, but that's where it came from. So what we developed in our Bokashi is we worked with the CSIR to develop indigenous microorganisms. So all of our microbes are South African, which is, I don't know, that's sometimes a good thing, but it's being South African is not always a good thing.
It's not going to work as hard.
And they seem to be, like, yeah, so we worked with the CSIR and we're doing some further development in that area with them, which we're really excited about. And then we said what we should look at what waste products are out there. And we use in our Earth Bokashi, basically we source stuff that would have been going to landfill. So we source sawdust and we stream it and get it hammer millet and all these things. So it's consistent in size. We use used coffee grounds that we source from major manufacturers. Our protein source comes from the dairy industry. So all of these products are sort of rejected products which would have gone into a landfill. And we use those in a sort of proprietary recipe. For our products. So that's why we call it Earth Bokashi, not just Bokashi. Bokashi is a generic term.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how we use it. And, you know, it's challenging, but it's less wasteful, it's sustainable, and it works really, really well because it has a lower odor than the EM-based stuff, which tends to be a lot more sour.
Yes.
And it's not a criticism, it's just it is. Ours tends to be, because of the wood shavings and sawdust and things in it, it tends to have a very low odor recipe, but they work in very similar ways.
But now you also took it that you could use it if you have dogs. You can do a dog poo Bokashi too, which I did try, and I was just like, oh, I can't do this. I actually can't do this.
The dog thing comes up. We've got two very big giant schnauzers, which are beautiful dogs, but you know, the size of the dog is in direct proportion to its amount of
what it puts out. Yeah,
what it puts out. And we people used to say, "Can we use your Bokashi bin for as a dog poo compost?" And we said, "Yeah, you can, but why would you want to? Because you can actually dig a hole in the ground, you put the dog poo into the hole, cover it with the soil that you've taken out, and the microbes in the soil will take care of it." So that tends to be a strategy that we use with our dogs. Putting it into your wheelie bin is not great because you end up with a very smelly wheelie bin.
So
composting, I suppose it's not decomposing your, biodegrading your dog poo through soil is probably a better solution than throwing it into a dustbin. And then because your food waste isn't going there as well, you end up with a clean, well, relatively clean, but you don't have flies and rats and roaches and everything in your dustbin, and if you pick it up, don't come and collect it, it's not an issue because you're taking care of all your organics in a different way.
Have you found over the last few years that people have become a lot more aware of recycling, reducing, reusing, upcycling, doing all of these things that are environmentally friendly, or do you find that it's still actually just tapered off at the same thing? With the amount of stuff that you're selling, are people like really buying into Bokashi and earthworm bins?
I think that during COVID, our commercial business took a hectic knock because all the offices closed down, and we've got machines in Okavango. Those resorts closed down. But the domestic business went crazy. And I think it did reflect the people spending more time at home. They were starting to think more about gardening. They were starting to think about more sustainable and resilience. I think we were thinking, let's grow our own stuff. And so, you know, it's from March last year, our business is on the domestic side has gone, I wouldn't say crazy, but it's gone really, really well. Just because people now are taking more care, they spend more time at home, and they're starting to think more about their home environment. But there's also so much media about the carbon crisis, which is the climate crisis, which is the right way to talk about it rather than global warming, because, you know, that idiot Donald Trump would have gone, oh, did you see it's look, it's who's speaking about global warming and it's when it's minus 10, you know. So, you know, so I think that people have also understood the difference between climate and weather, which is an important differentiator as well. I think there is a big move, and I think it's catching from schools, being more at home, wanting to do your own thing, grow your own, be more grounded.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely a trend, which is, and it's very positive. And it's across all income groups and, you know, from rural to urban, people are just starting to grow their own, which is fantastic.
Mm.
And I think that's what's complimentary about Bokashi. It is a circular system.
Yes.
Food that you grow, peel, goes into the Bokashi, it goes back into your soil, and, you know, that's the way it should be.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah.
But I find that, I mean, we should really be pushing. I mean, it was wonderful that you had this whole new system happening in Johannesburg where we're going to be recycling. So here's your recycling bags. Put your bags out on a certain day and we will come and collect, apart from the waste pickers who actually do a fantastic job as well. Except now, of course, that the city of Johannesburg doesn't have any trucks available to go and pick up the recycling. So, and I mean, they're saying, oh, no, now, you know, all the suburbs are going to have to pay an extra 50 rand a month for the recycling. It's what they're supposedly doing, but they are not doing. And in fact, I've heard that a lot of the stuff is actually still ending up in landfills. So how do we get people to understand that they need to be responsible for their waste? I mean, and to say, right, these are the things that you can could put into a compost heap. These are the things you can put into a worm bin. These are the things you can put into a Bokashi. I mean, is there one particular place that we can say, right, you have to do this? I don't think government's going to get behind that. I think it needs to be something that comes from private organizations saying to everybody, right, there is going to be no more pickups.
I take another point of view on it. I think that there's too much pressure put on consumers. And actually the responsibility for waste is actually at manufacturing, at production, and then at retail. So I think that the amount of waste is really in proportion to how much a Unilever or Procter & Gamble or whoever is thinking about their waste footprint.
Mm.
And these huge companies are not thinking about it enough. You still, I mean, even toothpaste, for example, why does it have to come in a cardboard box that's just all shiny, which then is not recyclable, which then, why can't it just be in a tube?
Yes, exactly.
So there's the wastefulness starts at production, not at the consumer. And then everyone always wags a finger at the consumer, and that's not fair. Consumers do need to take some responsibility for how they buy. But I think that sometimes consumers are so overwhelmed by what they need to do that they end up doing, you know, like a deer in the headlights. They just can't move and they don't do anything, which is why we produced that 52 Easy Things book, little booklet.
Oh, I did not know about this little booklet. Tell me about this little booklet.
So we sort of had this for our 10th anniversary. We were, obviously, COVID was there, and we had this little booklet, which I stupidly forgot to bring you a copy, but I'll drop it off tomorrow. And the idea was is that sometimes, you know, a large number of people doing a good thing, it actually has a massive impact, and it forgets how the cumulative impact of a lot of people doing good things is pretty significant. So we produced this book called 52 Easy Things to Live a More Planet You Can Do to Live a More Planet Friendly Life, and those 52 things were just like 52 weeks. You could do this in a week. And some of them were like, you know, when you go to a shopping center, don't put those onions and things in the plastic bag. Just get them weighed, put the stick on one of the onions, and take the onion and, you know, buy loose. So it's a very easy thing to do, and it's not very inconvenient. So we try to inspire, you know, the consumers to start thinking about doing easy things. And sometimes this whole, oh, you need to be recycling 100% and, you know, this and that and everything becomes overwhelming when, you know, like plant an heirloom seed or just grow one tomato plant. Just grow a thing of lettuce. That's all you need. Just grow one thing. And hopefully the one thing you do will lead to another thing, which leads to another thing, which leads to someone else doing something similar and all that type of thing. So that's what we've tried to do. And we offer it for free. You can download it by going to our website and looking at the blog page. You can download it as an e-book. We don't charge for it. And if you want a hard copy, we'll charge you. And we then donate 10 rand of every sale we make to the owl rescue guys in Hartbeespoort. So they can make a little money saving owls, because that's also the other thing is save owls. Don't put rodenticides and all the stuff around, because there's no such thing as an eco-friendly rodenticide, no matter what people say. So, yeah, so that's what we try to do. And I think that as consumers, and you're asking what is – I think it is, you know, one person talking to another person and not shouting at them and not lecturing them and just saying, hey, isn't this cool, you know.
We're both looking at our plastic bottles. I recycle these, by the way. I actually do.
But I think that recycling is the last resort to waste.
Well, the way I've been recycling, I think everybody knows, I'm like a complete mullet when it comes to creating eco bricks.
Yes.
So I make eco bricks, and the problem is at the moment trying to find out where to take them, because of course, you know, there's nowhere to go and drop them off. But fortunately, I have a friend who's actually building with them. So I've got all my kids doing it. I know a lot of schools are still doing it, and it is a way of getting rid of a lot of other waste as well. And if you don't have the bottle, you've got nothing to put those bits of plastic that can't be recycled into.
Oh, okay. There you go.
So I keep these all get made into bricks. But that is the thing. I mean, I had somebody who's now living with myself and my twins in our house, and she just turned around and looked and said, "I've never seen anybody ever recycle as much as you guys do. I mean, we throw away so very little; it's frightening."
Yeah.
Because it's either the paper recycling or it's cans that are being recycled, bottles, plastics, the ones we know that we can recycle.
Yeah.
Anything that can't be recycled for the waste pickers or through pick it up gets put into bottles and made into eco bricks. And then all the food waste either goes into the bokashi or it goes into the worm bin.
Yes. No, that's
it. And then there's hardly anything. And any clothes or books or anything, they all get taken out to charities or given to the waste pickers or whoever comes around.
Yeah, and I think there is, you know, from a consumer perspective, there is the sense that, you know, one really needs to take a little bit of responsibility about one's own footprint.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's also a lot about, you know, like you said, you give your clothes away, and it's fantastic, but also buy less.
Mm.
You know,
I don't buy anything. I was going through all of my slips for the tax for last tax year, and literally I think there were maybe about 10, apart from petrol, which was only about like 5 tanks filled in the entire year, because I mean, who could go driving anyway? Yeah. Anyway, I think there were about 10 slips that weren't actually food. That was it. I bought absolutely nothing. It was fantastic. I loved lockdown, to be honest with you. I was quite happy to sit in my house and play with my garden and read and not go out and spend money.
Yeah, no. I think a lot of people found lockdown to be very beneficial in that way.
Mm.
Also, just bringing families together again, because you had to be. You know, we had all of our children in our house, which was fantastic.
It sounds like you have a lot of children.
Well, they're children and partners. You know,
yes,
our children are a bit older than yours. So that's. But I do think that, you know, the lessons of being resourceful and being resilient and growing your own and being more environmentally aware and things like that. I mean, I hope that the tipping point, or let's call it the grand forced experiment on humanity, sustains itself going forward, that people retain those good habits that they started implementing when they were under lockdown or constrained from movement and things like that, like going shopping less for stuff you don't need, going to, you know, that those things carry on. Because I think there were some massive environmental benefits. Carbon emissions dropped because people weren't driving around as much, and they still are. But, you know, let's be responsible for our own carbon footprint and what we use, what we consume. But I still think that the manufacturers and the source.
Everything should start at source.
Yeah, that's when 90% of the waste is generated, not at the consumer side.
Yeah. So what other things do Earth Probiotics actually put out? I mean, I haven't spoken to you for at least a year or so, and I know that you've been moving ahead with a whole bunch of different things that you do.
So we sort of saw... you know, the bokashi is a great system, but even for commercial reasons, so we have a lot of commercial customers that use bokashi.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get over a ton of food waste, it becomes a bit of a hack, because you need too many bins, and they need to be properly fermented. And, you know, there's a lot of management issues that's got coming around bokashi at high volumes. So we developed a composting machine, which we call the Earth Cycler, which is a automated composting machine. We have one at Discovery, Standard Bank, FNB, just down the road here at the call center.
Mm.
We've got another 3 machines coming out. We've got them sitting in the Okavango, which is really a privilege to be able to go to the Okavango to install these machines.
One of the few places I haven't been.
I never thought I'd ever get to go. So that's been brilliant. And the machines are fully automated. They're smart machines, so they weigh everything and report on a daily basis, what's gone into them, what the carbon footprint saving is from putting that stuff in. It provides recipe guidance, because we all know that composting requires a balance between what we'd call nitrogen or green stuff, nitrogen-rich stuff, and then brown stuff, which is carbon-rich stuff, and that's woody type stuff. So we in these machines, when they're on, like at Discovery, for example, we'll use waste coffee cups if they're compostable. And this is also the thing about producers. And, you know, so stuff like that, which would normally go to a landfill because it's contaminated, it's not recyclable, now can be composted through these machines. So they're really fantastic machines. I think there's, in our minds, if you'll need someone to verify it, you can go, you can tell us. But we think they're as good as any machines that are made anywhere in the world. And they're locally manufactured, so we're very proud of the fact that we... And that was a great benefit, because we don't import from China or from India or any stuff like that. So we didn't have supply chain issues with these machines over COVID. And we also don't have currency issues. Everything's rand-based. And we're starting to export them. We've got some sitting in – we've got Zambia, Mozambique. One of our other smaller development machines is in the Seychelles.
This is a big story.
So those are really good. And then we also, with other partners, manufacture very, very big machines, which would do up to 80 tons of food waste a month. So these sit in shopping malls. So we have at Canal Walk in Cape Town. We have at Sandton City. We have at Eastgate. We've got at Empress Palace, which was the first one that we made. It's been running there since 2015. And Empress Palace, if you know, sometimes we always want things so immediate, but we worked out how much what that actually been diverted from landfill through this composting machine. It's over 1 million kilograms. That's a huge amount.
It is a lot.
So, you know,
we're running out of landfills as well. That's also another big problem.
Yeah, landfills. So the new landfill is going to be in Delmas outside of Johannesburg, and there's going to be a waste train that will take the waste there. So your costs, your waste costs are going to be extremely high. You know, and landfills are, you know, if we can send, like you do, just a little packet of some general waste, non-recyclable stuff and contaminated stuff, that's what we should all be aspiring to. Because not only does it make our lives cleaner and healthier, it also means that we spend less money on stuff. But I think the big issue at the moment is biodegradable versus compostable. And I'm very anti the label of biodegradable.
Why?
Because everything biodegrades.
But some things take a lot longer, though.
Yeah. So plastic biodegrades.
Yeah.
But it takes 1,000 years.
Yeah.
But this PLA stuff, which is polylactic acid-based plastic, it's just a plastic. And I hate that stuff. Because,
but does it actually biodegrade? Because I've got a lot of people who are working with this kind of thing at the moment as well. And I'm sitting there going, okay, so how long does it take to actually break down?
Yeah, and this is the point. It can break down in very specific circumstances. So it needs this type of environment, it needs to be in an industrial facility, it needs this much humidity, it needs this much heat, all these type of things. But how many facilities are there in South Africa, for example, that have where this stuff goes to? So it's just like everything else, we're a litter, buggered up nation. That, you know, I see they've got Zap It in the ZB is coming back.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah.
Because that's one thing we all grew up, as kids. Is that we used to have to come up with posters. I remember in Standard 1 or Standard 2 having to come up with a poster for anti-littering and you know, Zap It and ZB, and we had all of those wonderful things that, as kids, I think taught us not to litter. I mean, I cannot even imagine throwing something on the ground.
So these things just get chucked just like normal stuff, and so they will biodegrade over time, but it's going to take a hell of a long time. It still becomes a microplastic, which is eaten by something, or a fish or something, you know, before it disappears. So my golden rule is, if there's something which is science-y, like PLA, what is polylactic acid, don't use it. And if it says, you know, made from cornstarch and it's compostable, then use it, because you understand exactly what it is. If you don't understand it, don't use it. So this is my rule. So compostables are really coming into the market in a big way. We're seeing this... stuff that's made out of cornstarch. We're also seeing stuff coming in which is made out of potato starch, which is properly compostable. We're working with some people doing that. And that's really exciting. But that, again, needs to be at the manufacturer level.
But it's also stuff, it's being made out of food. You know, it's nice if you can take something which isn't actually a food stuff, which isn't, like you were talking about the wheat, with the bokashi, if you can actually take something which can compost easily, but it's not actually made from a foodstuff. And that was a big problem when it came to biodiesel at one stage, is that people are making biodiesel from edible food crops.
Yeah.
And they have done a lot of studies with something called jatropha, which unfortunately has to have specific growing conditions. So they were working on a frost-resistant variety of jatropha, which has no intrinsic use.
Yeah.
In fact, the plant itself, you know, you can't even burn it because the fumes are poisonous. Toxic. Mm. And they get used to create bomas for animals, and but the seeds are very, very high in yield in oil.
Okay.
So they were looking into it from that point of view. So I would be very loath to take something which can be actually used to feed people and then creating something from that.
I think that...
Unless you can eat the bags.
For me, it's a lesser of what evil, but I agree with you, and I wouldn't debate that point of view. But it's also about bagasse, for example. Mm. It's also about hemp. It's all of these other alternatives. It's not only plastics.
Yeah.
It's also the other stuff. You know, the stuff that the polystyrene for me is the worst invention in the world. And it's in our rivers, and you know, are just contaminated like you can't. So bagasse-based food services are fantastic. They keep things warm. They're compostable. They come from a renewable resource. It's a waste product. Hemp, I think, is a marvelous material which is underutilized. For some stupid reason in South Africa, they don't really get it. So I think alternative materials are really important. But again, it has to come from, you know, big companies like Walmart are actually starting to do quite a good job, and they're insisting on their supply chain, pushing back on them, saying you need to make that, you need to minimize your packaging footprint, you need to use more sustainable materials, and they're pushing back on their supply chain because they have so much power to do that. And I wish that more companies within our market would do it.
Yeah, there's still that big push from everybody. Oh, we must have organic food. I'm like, well, if you can do that, why don't you make everything more sustainable as well and lessen your footprint on the earth? And there's certain burger chains that I started boycotting in the 80s, mainly because at one stage they were responsible for the desecration of rainforests because of the farmers.
Who are you talking about?
I'm not going to say who. And then when they came to South Africa, and I went up Northcliff Hill, and it was their packaging was just strewn everywhere because they put it in this, in that, and then into something else, and then in a bag. And it was just like all of this kind of litter. And I just said, that's it. I will never buy anything from that chain. And I haven't.
But I think what's important, though, is, and I agree with you because, but I think that when a business starts doing something positive, we should celebrate that.
Yes. But then they need to get onto it. All of them must get onto it.
Yeah, but even like, I hate Woolworths. I think the Woolworths overpackages everything, and most of their packaging is not compostable, not even recyclable.
Yeah,
because in South Africa, it says they might be recyclable in Johannesburg, but not in Pofada, or if they have a store there. But you suddenly see that they're starting to move in a positive direction, and you go, okay, I hate Woolworths, but actually, let's celebrate this stuff they're going in.
Yeah.
And that Farming for the Future program there, which I never understood until I actually met a farmer, is fantastic.
Mm.
So one has to, you know, it's a little bit like, it's very easy to be judgmental and critical and things. And, and I'm not saying we shouldn't be, we should be. But let's also sometimes go to Woolworths and say, hey, you know, great job. I'm not allowed to swear on this program.
We can bleep you.
so we need to, and what I really appreciate is how, you know, smaller companies are coming through with new products and everything that weren't around the little thing. Mm. And it's usually an organic thing. It's usually a little bit too expensive, but hey, hopefully they'll get better and get better volumes and start generating good things. So, so that's also a point, is that support the good things and try and criticize the bad.
Yeah, well, I support anybody who does good stuff for the earth. My best is, though, when somebody came along and my favorite compost, and they said, so when are you going to put it into like a biodegradable bag? Like, do you understand what compost is? Okay, if you don't use all your compost at once, that you're going to have compost everywhere because it's going to degrade that bag 2 seconds flat.
So what do we do with that plastic? Is there a different way of, you know,
can I think we should be able to take it back.
Yeah, and it was, so what I get really irritated because I go, so polystyrene is, for me, is the worst thing. And Johannesburg was called the Witwatersrand for a reason. So white water, you know, wherever you drive, and you just see these streams and whatever it is, and every single one is contaminated and full of polystyrene.
Yeah.
and full of human feces because people are living on that.
And then they let their dogs go and jump around in the spray. And I'm like, I wouldn't let my dogs in that water.
Now, sometimes you don't have a choice. But and just imagine at South Africa, at Johannesburg, where the water was clean, the streams.
Like so it was when I was a kid.
Yeah, we used to fish.
Yes,
and
it's
not impossible. So when I go to a butcher, I like to take my own container because I'm only like I want to buy two steaks. I don't want to buy them pre-wrapped, you know, one for me, one for my wife, and you know, and then I take my own container. And the guys, I actually refuse to go there anymore because it's become such a hack. Because they're going, you know, well, just tear it on the scale. Well, they need, so the one guy at time said, okay, now I'm going to put it on the polystyrene, then I'm going to weigh it on the polystyrene or on the plastic, and then I'll throw that polystyrene away and put it in your container that you can take home. And they go, you're not forgetting. I even wrote these guys a note, and I said, you know, it's so frustrating. Why can't we bring our own containers to do these things? And it's the Craigall Butcher, which is very, you know, they're nice people.
Them that did it? Okay.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, please. You know, so I've never gone back.
Okay, so everybody, if you happen to know where that butcher is, when you go in there next, ask for the same thing. Okay.
Yeah,
in fact, yeah, you change. You can change what people want and what they do, and what businesses are going to do by consumer demand. And I mean, if you think about even just in the nursery and garden centre milieu, where people will say, "Well, we want food plants. We need more nut trees." Yeah. And people started supplying.
Yeah, exactly.
So we can say, we need this, we want this, and you must do this because otherwise we won't support you.
Well, it's the power of a lot of people doing small things. It becomes like a big thing.
Talking about small things, whereabouts can people download the booklet from?
So if they go to Earth Probiotic, so Earth as in E-A-R-T-H,
yeah.
the world, the Earth, Probiotic as in medicine, Probiotic. .co.za, and if they go onto the look at the menu and go onto blog, they can download the book there. They don't have to register. You can just download it, do whatever you want, and share it. It's free. It was our sort of little thing that we thought for our 10th anniversary. Let's celebrate it by giving away some stuff for free and seeing if we can inspire people to be good to Earth.
Well, I'm going to put it all over the place as well. I think that's a fine idea. Everybody, you need to get it with the program as well, okay? We only have one Earth. We need to look after it. So be pro.
I saw a thing on Facebook the other day that said Mars sucks. And you guys got no oxygen, it's got no water, it's got no... And we're spending billions of dollars getting to Mars. Why are we not spending billions of dollars on getting better things here?
I'm putting it out. Elon Musk, stop sending things to Mars. Okay, well, don't even think about sending things to Mars. Okay, rather get on board with fixing things down here.
He'll say he's doing his bit.
He is doing his bit for the Earth, but I mean, you know, rather eradicate poverty and stuff like that. He's got enough money. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming in and chatting.
Thanks, Val. It was really nice to see you. It's good to catch up.
When you get some amazing more products coming in, do let us know about it.
We've got some really cool products that will be coming out hopefully in June, July for domestic growing. So we're working on the prototypes, including dog composting, composting. So these things are hopefully going to be coming out in the not too distant future. So we want to encourage people to grow stuff at home.
We look forward to it. From advertising to being good for the earth instead of bad for the mind. Thank you, Gavin. And for the rest of you, of course, I mean, go and have a look at the website. They've got a whole bunch of great ideas, not just the booklet to download. Also have a look at their products. If you haven't booked Cashy before, well, why not think about doing it? We'll catch you again next time. In the meantime, get out into your garden, have some fun, and above all, stay grounded. Bye-bye. You've been listening to another episode of Grounded from Solid Gold Studios in Johannesburg. For more green ideas and events, pop along to Mel's Treasures on Facebook.